What is happening, everybody? Thank you for tuning in to the Producer's Corner with Spud Too Tight. And man, I have another great show for you today. On the phone, I have with me a very talented musician, composer, engineer. This guy does it all. He is also a Grammy-nominated producer and engineer, and is currently the full-time composer for the Glenn Beck program, which airs on Fox News Channel. Please put your hands together for Mr. Anthony Newitt. Welcome, sir.
Hey, Spud, how's it going?
Oh, it's going great, man. Thank you for calling in and taking the time for interviewing with me. Man, you've had a very successful music career, and it's steadily growing. Very inspiring. When I just information I've read upon you and the songs that I've listened to, it's just phenomenal, man. Can you give me a little background on when you started and how?
Well, thanks for the kind words, but I started at a very young age. My father was a great musician and music teacher. And I'll tell you what, there's nothing like growing up with a dad for a music teacher.
Oh, yeah.
He just played around me all the time. I'm an only child, and he just played guitar around me constantly. And while I was learning how to walk and talk, I was learning guitar at the same time. And at that time, you couldn't buy small guitars. Now, you could buy a pretty nice six-string guitar that's scaled down.
Sure.
For small hands. But I remember very, very vaguely, but I do remember he went and he bought a baritone ukulele, which is similar to the ukulele that you'd see, mostly in the Hawaiian.
In Hawaii, sure.
Right, but this is actually, it's a slightly lower pitch, and as a matter of fact, it's four strings, and those four strings are identical to the first four strings on a six-string guitar. So I started by playing TV theme songs. That was
nice.
My thing. I learned how to play by ear, and over time, I knew that it's what I wanted to do. And by the time I was still in high school, my last couple years of high school, I actually started giving music lessons. And by the time I graduated high school, I knew that I wanted to be involved with music. I just wasn't sure in what capacity. I always had a fascination with recording. So my first, dream was to be an engineer. And then over time, that evolved into a more of a production thing.
Sure. Being a guitar player, are you a classic rock fan? Or what style of genre are you
I would say I am most inspired by Brian May.
Okay.
And
never heard of Brian May.
Brian May from Queen.
Oh, sure. Okay.
And Steve Lukather. From Toto. But I'll tell you what, the Brian May thing, I was about 10 years old, and at that time, my father was giving music lessons, like I said, and he brought home, one of his students had given him a copy of Night at the Opera. And prior to that, the only music I really listened to was the music that my dad listened to, which wasn't all that vocal. It was more instrumental music like Chet Atkins and Les Paul.
Oh, yeah.
Ventures. And kind of shied away from vocal music. And then he came home with this Night at the Opera album. And you know what? Within about 3 weeks, we had to go out and buy a new one because I wore right through it.
Yeah, I hear you. I'm also a guitar player also. Started very young playing. And I'm more of a classic rock guitar player funk background. And a lot of my mentors, Jimi Hendrix, of course, being number one. Peter Frampton. Ted Nugent, and to the younger generation, I like Steve Vai, Stevie Ray Vaughan, Joe Satriani, Slash, definitely Van Halen.
Right, it's funny you mentioned Jimi Hendrix. As a youngster, reading the liner notes on this Queen album, I saw that Brian May's chief inspiration was Jimi Hendrix. So, of course, that made me interested in learning a little bit about Jimi Hendrix.
Oh, yeah. Man, I want to definitely talk about the two songs that I did hear from you, which is very prolific material. You have very big production from what I hear, and it's kind of comparable to the very big production of Mr. David Foster.
That's the ultimate compliment for me.
Yeah.
David Foster.
Oh, man, David's hot, man. His production did for Whitney, and lot of the Celine Dion stuff is just phenomenal. But your production, when I hear it, it's very big sounding to me. It's very prolific, and it's original. You know, the first song, Thunder Road.
Yeah.
Very hot.
The interesting story with Thunder Road. Okay, so, you know, most people know that that's one of Bruce Springsteen's very, very well-known songs from Born to Run. And a well-known Philadelphia radio personality named Helen Light contacted one of my colleagues, this gentleman named Dan May, who happens to be, in my opinion, the best singer-songwriter in Philly. And she had asked him about covering a Bruce Springsteen song in honor of Bruce's 60th birthday. So Dan, I'm Dan's producer, and Dan presented the idea to me, and we both agreed that this was the thing to do. And he chose Thunder Road, which was a highly ambitious choice. But we pulled two great musicians in to help us out. We Tom Hampton to play guitar, and Carlos Santiago Jr. to play violin. And I played piano, bass, and drums, and Dan did the lead vocal and background vocal. The song is actually going to appear on a compilation CD commemorating Bruce's birthday, and we'll be performing the song live at a great venue in Philly called the World Cafe on September 23rd, which is Bruce's actual birthday. So it was a fun and, like I said, very ambitious choice. And I didn't want to produce it like the original, but
sure,
somehow I wanted to pay homage to it. So there's a lyrical reference to Roy Orbison in the song. And Tom Hampton actually came up with the idea to cover the tune in the style of a Roy Orbison song. So I ran with that, and it has sort of a southwestern rock feel.
Yeah.
And very happy with it.
Oh, no, it was phenomenal. Again, hats off to you on that one. Another song that I listened to, which stuck out vocally for me, was Solid Ground.
Solid Ground.
The lead vocalist on that, who is she?
Oh, great. Well, this is a good opportunity for me to plug her. That was a great segue. Her name is Michelle Nagy. Now, the story behind this song, the reason why I wanted you to hear this song is I think it's a good representation of my production skills and the way songs tend to be presented to me. These two great songwriters named Richard Davis and Ray Phillips from Nashville and Texas, respectively, asked me to produce the song for them. And I don't think there's a greater compliment, come to think of it, when a Nashville resident, you know, asks a Philly guy to produce their song.
Yeah.
But anyway, the song was presented to me in the typical fashion. Ray Phillips sat at his piano and roughed out the chords and melody. And it's my job to hear past whatever may be presented in an unpolished way, frankly. You know, he mustered up the best voice he could, and you know, the idea there is to hear a great song. And you know, songwriters will often present material to me without a chord progression.
Sure.
You know, just a melody, and a melody by itself can be very, very ambiguous. But Ray presented to me what he gave me was actually very was a real pleasure. You know, comparatively.
Yeah.
But anyway, I played all the instrumentation on this one and brought in a great Philly local by the name of Michelle Nagy. And Michelle is one of those singers that can come in cold with no idea of what she's going to do. And after about the third take, she's literally in the song. You know, and her delivery is extremely believable, which is why I like to use her.
Oh, no, totally. I mean, she sounds very groomed, very studio groomed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the track in general, you know, I've talked about a lot of times, you know, a good production, a good timeless song to me, it fits like a glove. Every piece of element, every song, every note sounds like it was custom made for that particular song. And you can't take away from it, and you can't add to it. And definitely, these are one of the tracks that definitely stand out in that category for me. Again, hands off to you on that. It really is phenomenal.
Thank you very much.
You know, one thing that stands out about your great songs also is your mix. And, you know, I love talking to different producers and engineers on the types of equipment they use and different techniques they use within mastering and even from pre to post mix.
Mm-hmm.
What type of techniques and what pre's and what setups are you currently using in your studio?
Okay, well, I've been on the PC platform forever, which, you know, a lot of my colleagues are, you know, made fun of me for that, you know, why I didn't jump on the Apple bandwagon.
I
was the first to admit that, you know, that Apple makes an incredible machine, but I was just always been, you know, one of those PC guys. So when I made the transition from regular, you know, linear formats, whether it be analog or, you know, when I made that initial transition from analog to digital, was to what most guys did with either DA88s or ADATs.
Mm-hmm.
But when I made the transition over to the computer, I wanted to do everything I could to find the best software that I could that would work for me in the PC platform, and I settled on Sonar.
Really? Okay.
So that's my digital audio workstation, and I have a lot of outboard gear, but I'm finding as time goes on, a lot of what I'm doing is really in the form of plugins. But, you know, I'm a traditional guy in the sense that I like things to be hands-on, and you know, I got tired of mixing with my mouse, so I actually picked up these Mackie control services that
I'm very
pleased with, and there's very little latency between, you know, what's happening in the computer in real time and the fader positions.
Sure.
And, you know, I use an AKG 414 mic, which I'm very fond of. I recently picked up Bob Heil, you know, that made the Heil Talk Box. He contacted me recently and sent out a PR30 for me to use, because he had gotten word that I am Glenn Beck's guy and a fan. So he sent over a PR30 for me to try, and then, you know, for... You know, I've always been the condenser mic guy, and he talked me out of that.
Yeah.
At least for miking guitar amps and miking an acoustic guitar, I'm actually using a dynamic mic for that. As far as my mixing, you know, techniques, the thing with me is that I think it's always important to reference your material in other areas. Not just get so comfortable in your studio to be able to, you know, burn a quick disc and go out to your car, or, you know, go to more consumer grade systems that you can get an instantaneous sound as to whether or not you're on the mark in terms of your mix and your coloration and things like that.
Sure.
I think what tends to happen is people become so acclimated to their monitors and just their studio setup, that they sort of lose that point of reference, and you know, with ear fatigue and things that can creep up on you really, really fast, especially if you're working in a studio for, you know, maybe 8 to 10 hours. I mean, if the worst thing you can do is to allow your ears to fatigue like that and expect to get a great result. So I would say, for me, the big thing is to, you know, give the ears a rest, you know, be willing to go out and listen to your stuff on other systems, so you have that immediate point of reference. And then always listen, always take the time to listen to industry, commercial recordings in the interim, so that you can sort of ground yourself. And, you know, after a while, you know, you crank those highs a little too much, they start to sound normal.
Exactly.
And then for somebody else, it sounds like you're stabbing him in the ear with an ice pick.
Yeah, totally. You know, it's funny you mentioned with the ear fatigue. My last couple episodes, I'd say maybe 2-3 episodes on the show, I talked about ear fatigue. And like you say, if you're in sessions 12 hours a day, you know, I try not to stay on a song that long in the room. You know, I definitely got to get to a different room that has different environments. You know, sonically, it's just your ears are done, and everything sounds like you got, you know, earphones over your ears, and you don't. It's just everything sounds muffled.
Exactly.
You know, with the processing of the signal, of a lot of times, I found myself using less EQ if I have really good preamps running into my line source. What type of preamps are you using?
Well, I'm actually using Behringer preamps, and I know that, you know, comparatively to what's out there, you know, the Behringer may not have the same respect that some other pre's do, but I'm actually very, very fond of this preamp. I find it to be very, very transparent, and you just nailed it on the head when you said less EQ. the whole thing is, you know, I can remember a time when I was relatively new at this, and I thought EQ was the name of the game. I just figured, well, you know, the whole thing about recording is knowing how to EQ.
Exactly.
Until I really learned that whole principle of garbage in, garbage out. You know, if you're not happy with the way the sound is going in, you're not, you know, why have that much faith in yourself? If you can't get the sound right through correct miking, or in you mentioned good preamps, if you don't have that ability, then why should you have that much faith in yourself to be able to clean it up in post-production?
Oh, totally.
So I'm a big proponent of getting it right on the way in.
Sure.
And the other thing you'd mentioned about, you know, another thing that crossed my mind about, you know, mixing techniques. Before the days of automation, it was very difficult to... Mixing was a much more difficult thing, aside from the obvious thing, you know, that automation allows you to have the instant recall and vector lines that will automate throughout the song. Well, also, the other thing is, you know, as you're cutting the song, and you may work on this song over the course of a month, you know, bringing various session guys in or laying some tracks down, vocals, post-production, every time you pull that mix up, you're making little adjustments to that mix.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say it's a day that you're cutting vocals. Well, as I'm, you know, setting up for the vocalist, I am constantly just tweaking little things. Oh, maybe I want to roll off a little bit of the 80, you know, on this track or whatever.
Yeah.
Or, you know what, there's a little too much reverb on this track. Let me, you know, and you're always making those adjustments so that when it comes time to do final mix, at that point, you've already put a lot of time in. And the beautiful thing is the time that lapses between working on the song is very valuable, because you're giving your ears that opportunity to rest. And next time you call up the mix, then it's the errors are a little bit more apparent at that point.
Yeah, totally. You know, I know crossing over from the analog world to the DAW world, I'm also a good advocate of being an analog user for recording engineering. But what I found, what was nice about the DAW system is that I was able to create templates within my mix. So, like you said, when we're recalling a mix, you know, in the hardware where we may have to, readjust everything, our EQs, our settings, because, you know, nothing was savable.
Sure. Well, it's one of the reasons why, you know, I had said to you when we were talking about outboard gear, I mean, at this point, my racks of outboard gear are more for aesthetic reasons than anything else. You know, it's like, hey, this guy's got a lot of gear. But the reason why, to piggyback on what you're saying, one of the reasons why using the plugins is so great is that, you know, if you have this great preamp or compressor or an aural exciter or something that you just really like to use, we only have one of those. So, you know, what if you decide that you want to, you know, use it on three or four tracks? Well, you really can't without having to do some re-recording and just, you know, the old-fashioned way. You know, the beautiful thing, the other great thing about working in a DAW setup is you could literally, you know, insert that great effect on multiple tracks. And like you said, any of those presets that you may have made that are a really good starting point for the average voice or acoustic guitar, you're halfway there.
Yeah, you know, it's like, again, I found when I got introduced to the pre's, you know, before then, like you said, it's you're trying to make a good mix at post time, and, you know, not having that good signal processing, I found myself using more EQ than I should have, which really muddied up my recording.
Sure.
But when I started getting introduced to the good pre's and hearing the difference between a processed signal versus an unprocessed signal, I was like, gosh, man, it brought out the highs. It flattened out the extra low end. It kind of made it more better sounding than muddy sounding to the pre. So, it's just a really eye-opener for me with my mix. I can't live without them now.
Absolutely.
Man, you know, your background in engineering, like I said, it's just having those different ideas and sharing those tips with different users. It's an eye-opener for everybody listening.
Well, thanks. You know, and one of the other things you were talking about good miking and EQing, I would say, you know, the only time I find myself EQing a little bit on the in path is, you know, if you're miking an acoustic guitar, a lot of times you want to get that nice proximity effect and you want to get the mic relatively close to the sound hole. And as you know, that could be a little woofy.
Yeah.
So, you know, I find myself with EQ, more effective EQ is sort of cutting out, you know, just rolling out some of the things that you may not want. Instead of, you know, a lot of novices, they're thinking in terms of, well, what can I add to hype this?
Sure. You know, like I said, it's, you know, are you using a lot of, like, the Behringer model? Is that an older model or are these newer model Behringers?
They're newer amps, and, you know, that's the thing. I think a lot of the reason why, you know, like some of my colleagues that are, you know, real gearheads and have some really, really nice stuff, I think one of my biggest limitations over the years is just not having a lot of funds to, you know, to go out and say, well, I'm going to get this, you know, $4,000 tube mic pre, you know, that really wasn't an option for me. So I think in some ways it made me a little bit of a better engineer because I always had to work with what I had. And I just find that Behringer makes a really nice piece of equipment. It's very reasonably priced, and I find it to be very, very clean.
Oh yeah, Behringer makes some really great products. I use one of their line level sub mixers to bus all of my keyboards through directly into my sound card. So yeah, they make some great products there.
Yes.
You know, I want to talk about something on your production, being that you've worked with a lot of artists and composed a lot of music. What are your methods of production? Do you come up with the songs first, or do you have an artist in mind that you write for, or what's your method of production?
Okay, I would say that it depends on who is coming to me. I have some clients that are songwriters exclusively, and then I have some artists that are performers as well. And for the ones that are performers, a big thing for me is to try to preserve what I think their sound is. If somebody has a certain signature sound that I think really needs to come through, I don't want to make it about, well, you know, what do I want as a producer? What do I think is sounds best? A lot of it is, you know, just trying to preserve the sound of that artist, but employing all the things that I've learned over the years. I'm a very traditional sort of musician in that, you know, I love orchestral strings, you know, Hammond B3, Wurlitzer, Fender Rhodes, acoustic piano.
Sure.
Generally would prefer to have, you know, an electric bass versus a synth bass. So in that regard, you know, it always ends up being a little bit of me and a little bit of the artist. But vocally, I really want to preserve the sound of that artist the best that I can. Now with the songwriters, you know, a lot of songwriters that I work with actually have publishing deals in Nashville. And so I find that I'm doing a lot of stuff that has sort of crosses into the country genre. But for that, you know, if I'm doing a songwriter demo, then it's about just choosing the right vocalist that I think is going to deliver that song in the most flattering way. And again, just doing what I think is going to display that song
sure,
in a way that it's going to be marketable.
Oh, so, and you're doing a great job of that, Anthony. Hats off to you again on your production. And what kind of upcoming products do you have on your plate now? I'm sure you're busy, definitely with the Glenn Beck program. Is there anything else?
I'm split between what I'm doing for Glenn Beck, which is really encompasses a few different things. He's got a nationally syndicated radio program that's on every day from 9 a.m. Eastern time until noon. And he does a lot of parodies and a lot of comedic stuff. So I find a lot of pleasure in that, actually. It's a little bit of a deviation from what I normally do, you know, to be able to produce these little jingles and parodies of existing commercials and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Then my bread and butter stuff, you know, I have my clientele that I see almost every day, but I'm putting in about an 8 to 10 hour day, and there's some very, very talented people that come to me as far, the ones who actually come into my studio may come as far south as Delaware and as far north as New York. So my local clientele covers probably about a 200-mile radius. But I'm also finding that with the internet, I'm getting a lot of customers that are from, you know, out of the area that will send me rough demos of their material, and then I'll, you know, do my best remotely, and hopefully they're pleased with it in the end.
Oh, great job, Anthony. Well, I don't want to keep you. I definitely want to thank you again for coming on my show and sharing your knowledge and experience with the audience, and I would definitely love to have you back on your new projects that you got in your future ahead, so I definitely appreciate you coming by again, Anthony.
It's my pleasure, Spud. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, sir. Have a good day.
You too.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
And hats off again to Mr. Anthony Newitt for coming in and chopping up with me on the producer's corner, man. I really appreciate it. You know, it's just really nice and see the versatility that's out there as producers and composers, man. And, you know, a guy like Anthony Newitt, man, he's no stranger to hard work, and he's definitely an advocate for the grind, and he's continuing to do great things. And for everybody who wants to contact Anthony and check out what he does and on his website, man, he's got a really nice website, and that's located at www.newettstudios.com. And also, before I go, I want to play his track Solid Ground for everybody so you guys can get a good listen and what the track's about, and I'll let that play out for the remainder of the show. And until next week, you guys take it easy. I'll have some nice interviews coming up. You guys stay tuned for that. You guys be safe.
Last night.